You're listening to Scary Stories from Camp Roanoke. This is a podcast where we tell you the spooky things that we find and like to talk about. Mm-hmm. My name's Katie Wiggins.
I'm Morgan Campbell.
Today is a little bit different because it is our last dispatch before we enter the gloom, the beautiful gloom of the summer. I kept trying to imagine happy, bright things, and then my brain kept going into, like, deep under ocean, old-timey scuba equipment. Oh. Very, very dark.
Scary.
We're exploring the husked shipwreck that is a fun summer.
You took, like, my two least favorite things.
Today, we are not going to be talking about a ghost show. We are going to be reading the stories that people sent in to us. And I have to say, this batch is really something special. Oh. It is really indicative of the type of people I think would feel really at home at camp. Like, these people are consummate Camp Roanoke campers.
Okay.
Involved in these fucking wild situations that just feels just right up our alley.
Ooh.
So I'm gonna start with a little short one that I think will set the scene pretty well for
us. Can I say how excited I am? I love listener stories. I've been jazzed about this all week. I'm so excited.
Oh, my plan is to, like, you're going to be, like, torn in half by the end of this episode, I think. And you're going to love it. Both of you are going to love it. Okay. Our first story is called Bigfoot, My Guardian Angel.
Was this Jacob?
No. It's from Caitlin Gordy. She says, okay, first off, I literally love your podcast. My mom got me listening to it way back in 2018. We still talk about the Waverly Hills episode. I don't remember that episode at all. But I'm so glad. Anyway, I'm going to start with my story. My family has always been really interested in the unexplained. Me and my granddad used to go to the bookstore every weekend when I was like 9 or 10 and get UFO and Bigfoot books. Aww. Now we just watch the History Channel since that's all it is now. It truly is the Conspiracy Channel. But I think this stemmed from our weekly bookstore runs. I was watching Finding Bigfoot one summer and saw where they took foot imprints of Bigfoot and had put them on display. Now, my dumbass 9-year-old self was convinced that Bigfoot watched me sleep. I have no idea why, but I found comfort in the fact that this big, hairy, smelly cryptid would make his way into my Cinderella-themed bedroom and just watch me sleep in bed. I was always bragging that my guardian angel was a buffoon of a Sasquatch. After seeing the foot imprint episode, I was like, OMG, I can just put plates of dirt around my room, and when he comes tonight, I can get his footprints and sell it for a shit ton of money.
Businesswoman.
With my foolproof plan in mind, I filled 10 plates with dirt from our garden and placed them around my room. Why my parents let me do this, I have no clue. Shame on them. I disagree. I think in childhood is like the only time when you're allowed to do insane shit like this.
Yeah.
Back to her. She says, I went to bed excited like it was Christmas Eve. The next morning, I woke up with crumbs all in my bed. I looked around the room and my literal plates of dirt and saw that half of them were empty. I was confused until I looked in the mirror. I had eaten 5 plates of dirt in my sleep.
I've never been happier.
I don't know why, but I didn't stop after one plate. I had a problem with sleepwalking, so I guess that's why, but who knows. So yeah, that's the time I fell asleep thinking my Bigfoot guardian angel was going to make me millions of dollars, when in reality I chowed down on some dirt in my sleep.
No, no, no.
if you take the time to read this, thank you. I feel like this is the right podcast for this story.
You're not wrong, lady.
The image of being like, oh, oh, and then looking at yourself in the mirror and seeing like dirt all over your mouth. It's the most unbelievable shit.
That's so funny. I'm so sorry you ate so much dirt.
Why? What?
I wonder if it was like a comical, like Scooby-Doo, you just picked up the whole plate and dumped it in your mouth. Or was it like a scooping?
She's this little 9-year-old girl. I'm sure she just like pulled the plate up into her bed and just like scooped it dead-eyed into her little face.
Oh, that's amazing.
I feel like this is like exactly the kind of shit I would do as a kid.
Yeah.
Be like, get my little plates of dirt and make a little place for him to walk.
I assumed maybe the parents were going to play along, and maybe the dad, if he had a big foot, would put his foot in a couple of the plates. No.
Nope.
But what if she ate the proof? She ate the proof.
What if she knew she couldn't handle the truth, so she had to consume it in the night? Oh, Caitlin. Sweetie.
Thank you, Caitlin.
You are the best kind of people. I think if our country was run by people like you, we'd be in a really interesting spot.
I'm so happy. I'm beginning to rip in half. It started.
Okay. So now we're going to do spooky true stories from Allie. Dear Katie and Morgan, first of all, anyone who has left a review asking you to let up on the unnecessarily long banter is fundamentally incorrect. You're so right. Your friendship translates through the show, and I have yet to come across another podcast that makes me feel like I'm part of that friendship. So keep it up. It's the only time I feel like I'm included in a podcast. Anyway, I have spooky true stories to share with you and your devoted listeners. Thank you so much, Allie. I really appreciate that. I also feel like people who are like, there's too much giggling and too much girlness. I'm like, hun, then this is not the podcast for you.
Yeah.
It's not accidental. We don't go into every episode being like, and this time, Morgan, I don't want to peep out of you. You keep your mouth the fuck shut and don't like, no, we, no. It's good. Yeah. It's good. It's intentional. Happy, happy, good. It's okay to be girls. Okay, story one. To set the scene, I am a direct descendant of John Proctor, one of the first men in Salem to be stoned to death as a witch.
Wow.
He offered himself as a sacrifice when his pregnant wife was accused. Luckily for me, Mary, his wife, was put in a holding cell until she had her baby. By the time she had fully come to term, her charges had been dropped. However, I wasn't told about my family history until I was in high school, which led to a brief pagan phase, of course.
Hell yeah.
That's great. I don't think the Proctors would be happy you did that, but... But cool. I'm glad you did it anyway. This scary story comes at a time when I was in third grade and had only a couple of good friends. I was the weirdo in the corner that couldn't handle social interactions.
Hear, hear.
We don't relate to that at all. I told my mom one day on the way home from school that I could feel people's sadness as if it were my own, and I would try to give them some of my own energy to help them. She looked at me completely shocked and told me that she had gone to see a psychic during a hard time in her life, and the psychic had told her that she would eventually have a little girl who needed extra protection. She told my mother that her unborn first child would be a strong empath with mild psychic energy and would need guidance.
Whoa.
My mom did her best, but I was too young to understand how to control my empathy. One of my friends, Marie, invited me over for a play date. It was a slightly chilly, overcast day, but she had an entire farm to explore, so we put on our rain boots and headed out anyway. As we were climbing trees, jumping on the trampoline, and throwing rocks, I started to feel odd. It's hard to explain. It felt like we weren't alone anymore. As I stood on a large rock, I took in the odd feeling I was experiencing. When I opened my eyes and looked around, I started to feel a group around me. Then started to actually see five of them in tall brown grass surrounding us. I told Marie what I was seeing, and she looked around, not seeing anything.
Ooh.
I told her to stand on the rock with me. I grabbed her hand, and I could feel her begin to get uncomfortable. I asked her, "Do you see them?" She started panicking and asked, "See what?" I said, "Do you see the witches?" At that moment, she ran to the house crying and I was sent home. The energy never followed me. I never felt or saw them again, but it never left my mind. Oh, poor kid.
That is so scary.
I bet that family was just like, "That little girl is strange. She will not be having grilled cheeses with you again." Another story. After their divorce, my mother began dating a man whose wife had died of a heart attack 2 years before. I visited them quite often and would hang out with my mom's new boyfriend's son. My mom would often wake up in the night and see a woman standing on her boyfriend's side of the bed. She told her boyfriend that she thought it was his dead wife, disapproving of her presence in the house. My mom's boyfriend, we'll call him Steve, was too hurt to think that his dead wife was still hanging around, so he didn't question it, but he said he never wanted to talk about it again. Oh. One night, my mom decided to get up when she saw the woman at the edge of the bed. The entity quickly left the room and rushed into Steve's son's room. My mom quickly followed it and saw it swoop into the tiny closet in Steve's son's bedroom. Seeing this, my mom decided that this is where the entity spent most of its time. Seeing herself as a very amateur witch, she decided she wanted to trap the entity in the closet so that it wouldn't bother her in her bedroom anymore. She smudged the main bedroom and then proceeded to line the closet door, the entrance of Steve's son's room, and the entrance of the main bedroom with salt as a purifier. She lit a candle in each corner of the house and said a heartfelt prayer for Steve's ex-wife to move on, and she went to bed that night without telling anyone what she had done. The next morning, she woke up in agonizing pain. She rushed to the bathroom to see burn marks on the left side of her nose, down her cheek, to her chin, and bubbling sores on her neck. She ran to each room and removed that salt immediately. She still sees the woman at the end of the bed, but she no longer tries to fight it and has embraced it as part of the home. Thank you for everything you do. I hope Morgan enjoys these listener stories. Keep it spooky.
Oh my God. First of all, mad props for following it. That's so bold and I love it. That's insane.
I wonder if it isn't his ex-wife.
Yeah, why would his ex-wife burn her? It's pretty bold.
I mean, I don't think that's the first instance of an ex-wife supposedly being bold with a new girlfriend.
That's true.
I don't think this has never occurred in history. But it would be interesting if it was something else.
That'd be crazy.
Darker, scarier, more menacing, and she like sends a heartfelt prayer that's like, "God, you can take Linda on. She's ready." And Linda is actually like Marth. Marth is terrifying and has claws for feet and is like, "I don't call me Linda," and then just like freaks out on her face. Typical shit. Anyway, it's just an idea. This podcast is brought to you by my Etsy store, The Second Harvest. At The Second Harvest, you have the opportunity to commission beautiful, custom little portraits of beloved animals, your many lovers, the count who funds your operas, or to make another person's day with a really meaningful gift. No contact required, you selfless little minx. And if you've been swept up in the recent spiritualist movement, I'm also offering tarot readings there. So if you're in need of a little guidance, validation, I'm here to help. All my offerings start at just $30 American, and I shall provide a link in the show notes. Okay, this one is called, "I Secretly Lived in Someone's Attic."
Oh, no! I don't like it.
Sounds like an email from a ghost.
I already hate it. And by that, I mean I love it.
All right, let's see if we can tear you in half. "Hello, friends. I'm writing this at work, but fuck that shit, am I right? Let's get to it." My experience all begins when I met my boyfriend, now husband, in high school drama class. Married 16 years now. Oh, how cute, they're high school sweethearts. Yeah, 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 moving on. He was a senior, and I was a lowly sophomore. He, being 2 years ahead of me in school, graduated and moved from California, where we lived, to New York to attend a military university. We dated 2 years long distance, and at the end of my senior year, we were engaged. When I graduated in June, I decided to go to college in New York to be closer to him. Not having any friends or family that lived on the East Coast made finding room and board a difficult task. The college I attended did not have dorms available.
Oh.
I spent weeks looking through ads, rental listings, even the school's rooms for rent that empty nesters put out for college students. Remember last episode? This is me, Katie, talking when I was talking about the weird energy of New York State.
Mm.
This is about to be another
nail
in that coffin. Ugh. I finally found a post that a woman had put out saying she had rooms for rent in her home. In comes small 65-year-old Chinese woman from stage right. We'll call her Ling. With the 3-hour coast-to-coast time difference and her odd work schedule, it took a couple of weeks to actually get her on the phone. She said that she did indeed have 3 rooms for rent, but they were currently occupied by other students. I expressed my thanks and disappointment, asked her questions about leads she may have on the other places to live, etc. We chatted back and forth for a few minutes, then she said, "You know what? I do have a 4th room available. My mom stayed there until she passed. You seem like a nice girl and I'd really like to help you out. You can rent it if you like."
Aww.
Since all the other room hunting had yielded 0 results, I jumped on the opportunity like a pigeon on a French fry. Come July, I was moving to New York. I got my naive ass on a plane and flew straight into the weirdest hell I've ever experienced.
Oh, no.
Oh, been there. I also went to college in a weird northeastern spooky town. And it was super fucking weird. The moment my shuttle service delivered me on the doorstep of that Chinese woman, my life changed for the bizarre. Ling greeted me at the front door and took me inside her home, where the other tenants, my housemates, were waiting. There was Michael, who was flamboyantly gay and proud, which, good, you should be. Mm-hmm. He always smelt like sweat, dead things, and nightmares. Just awful. But he was super sweet, and I liked him a lot. Michael lived in the basement. More on that later. There were also 2 foreign exchange students renting attic rooms. Really, a tiny attic that had been converted into 2 even tinier rooms. They spoke very little English and kept to themselves. What a group. What a household. Everywhere you look. Dunk, 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 dunk. Just like, I want to watch this sitcom. The house itself was very, very small and very retro. It had terracotta shag carpeting throughout. Mustard yellow floral laminate tiles in the kitchen and bathroom, wood paneling on the walls, and brown stained glass light fixtures that hung from the ceiling with those long prison style chains. You know, the 70s.
Oh my God.
But the house was clean, and I was super appreciative to be living anywhere, so the decor didn't derail my youthful optimism. Ugh. This was all well and good until Ling showed me the room I'd be staying in. Off.
Oh no.
Off of the living room, there were 2 bedroom doors. Ling points to the first door and says, "That's her room." Then she points to the second and says, "And this is yours." She turns the knob on the door and proceeds to open it in the slowest way possible. One hand on the doorknob, the other on the center of the door, pushing so, so, so slightly. She was opening the door as if trying not to disturb a sleeping infant on the other side. While the door was opening, it creaked and moaned like it was competing in a scariest door contest. After the small eternity, the door was fully extended open. Just imagining staring at this tiny woman and just being silent except for like,
Anytime I host, when I give a tour of my house, that's going to be how the whole tour goes.
And this is your room. Okay. After a small eternity, the door was fully open, and I could see why she had been hesitant to rent the 4th room. Not only was it the room her mother had passed away in, it was the exact same condition. This was a scene straight from Great Expectations and Miss Havisham's doomed wedding. Cobwebs draped the ceiling from corner to corner like curtains. There were nails on the walls with cracks running up and down. Artwork hung crooked, covered in dust and webbing. And in the middle of the room, I shit you not, a hospital bed made up with sheets and a pillow covered in inches of dust. I was shocked. Not that I had been living a lavish lifestyle before, because I wasn't. I was just taken off guard. My face must have reflected my dumbfoundedness because Ling says, "It's actually very comfortable," and goes in to plug in the hospital bed.
Stop! Oh, no!
Because her mother had been bedridden, the mattress circulated air to prevent bed sores. Ling plugged in the hospital bed and it began to circulate air, or as I'd like to call it, moaning. I mean, moaning, like death moans. And then she goes, woo. Insane! You can take that shit and fuck the right off with it.
And that's the same mattress I'm assuming that her mom passed on.
Yeah, the last time someone was on it, they did not survive it. But I love that to calm me, Katie, I love that to calm her new tenant's nerves. She's like, "Oh, let me just plug the bed in for you. It can scream."
Yeah, let's stir up some death dust.
I could feel the blood drain from my face. I was trying to be polite and grateful. No.
No.
But what do you do when your new sleeping arrangement is one step above a grave plot? Ling must have sensed my devastation because she quickly threw in, "I really like this bed, so if you don't want to use it, we can put it in my room." I didn't hesitate. Later that evening, I helped Ling remove the hospital bed from my room and move it into hers. After she was settled in, I quietly closed the door to my room and began cleaning. I removed the cobwebs, took down the crooked artwork, scrubbed the walls, even walked to the closest store and got an air mattress and new bedding. Your rent better be 50 cents.
Yeah.
Because she should actually be paying you to clean out this place and make it habitable.
Yeah. I can't believe she didn't clean it.
By the end of the cleaning, I had a twin air mattress on the floor, a closet full of hangers, and a suitcase being used for socks and underwear. It was quaint, clean-ish, and I was happy. After a few days, I had acquired more things for my room. A mini-fridge, microwave, nightstand, and lamp. Hung up some curtains and even got a job. Between working and going to school, I wasn't at the house very often. And when I was, I didn't have much cause to leave my room. Michael was often in my room even when I wasn't home because I had a computer and he didn't. He would use my computer or he'd come up to my room when I was home just to hang out and talk. We became friends probably out of necessity. He for my computer and I for his always wanting my computer. A symbiotic relationship if there was any. To sum this up, I got used to his smell, his horrible, acrid, sense-assaulting smell. Okay. I never said anything about his BO because I didn't want to hurt his feelings. I just dealt with it. As time went on, I started to notice the smell even when he wasn't around. Every once in a while, the curtains in my room would flutter like someone had briskly walked past them, and I'd get a whiff of that same horrible smell.
That's fun.
At this point, I was like, is Michael dead? I am a firm believer in denial, denial, denial. So I chalked up my... You'll fit right in the Northeast, my friend. So I chalked up my fluttering curtains to the old drafty house and the smell, to Michael's lingering offensive BO. One day, while alone in my room, the smell was so bad, I decided to wash everything, thinking his BO had somehow attached itself to my room. Ling had a washer and a dryer set up in the basement for all of us to use, so I gathered my laundry pile and set off to launder my things. The basement entry was also off the living room and had that classic single bulb with a chain hanging from the ceiling over a wooden staircase with steps that a demon child could reach through and grab your ankle from behind or some brought back to life little boy could slash at your Achilles tendon with a scalpel. You know those steps? I do. No fair. Gage, what did you do? Pet Cemetery is fucking ridiculous. Okay. Mm. It was that kind of basement entrance. I grabbed up my hamper full of laundry and proceeded down the basement steps. I took one step down the stairs when a hot breeze rushed through me. I felt it in my bones. I froze, trying to comprehend what had happened, when I was suddenly smacked on the back of the head, hard enough to knock the clip out of my hair and dislodge the hamper from my arms. I barely noticed my hamper rolling down the stairs because I was freaking the fuck out, scrambling back to the safety of my room. Once locked behind the safety of my door, I got on the phone and called Michael. I don't know what I was expecting. I just knew that Michael lived in the basement and I needed to call him. Not that there was anything he could do. My logic was also freaking the fuck out. When he answered, I told him about my experience on the basement steps and urged him to come to my room. For his sake or mine, I still don't know. He couldn't come to my room, however, because he wasn't home. In fact, no one was. This was a rare instance when I was home alone. Michael tried to calm me, saying that the spirit has never hurt him. When I asked him what he was talking about, nonchalantly states, "Yeah, he's my ghost friend, always hanging around. He never does anything, though. I just kind of feel him around." The rest of the night is uneventful. I never retrieved my laundry basket from the basement floor. I honestly don't know what happened to it. It could still be there for all I know. I started walking to the laundromat after that. Me, a poor college student, would rather walk my dirty underwear through the snow to the laundromat and pay for laundry than go to the basement again. That says a lot. When winter... Over the next few days, I casually bring up my experience to Ling, who confesses that the nurses who tended to her mother refused to go into the basement. So this is like pre-mother's death. I also talk to the foreign exchange students who only giggled and made boo noises and shook their heads at the basement door.
That is the best response to anything spooky I've ever in my life have heard.
Oh my god, that is so funny. When winter break came along, I decided to fly back to California for Christmas and visit my family. I never mentioned my experience to them because my loving brothers and sisters fully expected my time in New York to fail, and I'd come running home broke and brokenhearted. So as far as they were concerned, I was doing great. The house was great. Everything was great. When I got back to New York and Ling's house 2 weeks later, I found that all the locks had been changed. Great!
What?
Apparently, when you're a landlord, you can just do that. Turns out, when I was away on break, Ling found out she had lymphoma, said that all of us college students gave it to her because that's how cancer works, and threw everyone out. I literally had to get a ladder, climb in through the window, collect my things in bed sheets, and reverse out the window down the ladder like a thief in the night, except broad daylight, 12 degrees, 6 inches of snow. New York! Although this is not the city. This is like small town. Determined to succeed on my own in New York, Michael, the two foreign exchange students, and myself secretly lived in Ling's attic until we found a new place to live. Everywhere you look! Dun, dun, dun. That's the show, guys. That's the show. Secretly living in an attic with two foreign exchange students, Michael, who stinks, and me.
Michael, who stinks. What a legacy. This is awful.
Oh my god. When I got my own apartment, I moved out and didn't see my housemates again until 3 months later. I was hanging out with Michael, just doing friend stuff, out to lunch, shopping, etc., and I noted that Michael smelled very nice and told him so. I asked if he was trying something new or seeing someone, and he said, nope, he was a creature of habit and had been wearing the same scent for years. I embarrassingly confessed that I thought he smelled when we lived together, and he laughed because he thought it was me who smelled and didn't want to say anything. The light bulb clicked. We both smelled that horrible smell and thought it was the other one. He even confessed to smelling it when I wasn't around. I don't know if I'm more offended that my friend thought that I smelled like corpse farts or that the presence of that house smells like brimstone and I didn't put the two and two together until I was long gone. What considerate friends they are to each other. They're both literally like, you stink a lot, but I would still like to use your computer. Oh my God. That's really the foundation of heterosexual relationships.
Smelling and computers.
He stinks, but he's got a nice computer. I don't know if the presence in the house came about when I cleared the deceased woman's things when she first moved in, if it was a manifestation of her illness, or if it had been there all along. All I know is that the fluttering curtains, wafting foul odor, and strong smack to the head were real, and I have to come to terms with those facts. Also, Ling doesn't wear underwear when she vacuums, but that's another story for another podcast. Thank you for sharing my story. I love listening to you girls. Your intellectual wit and banter keeps me back coming for more. Keep them stories coming. Mad love.
Ooh. Just quickly, I have to say, I think that's an older woman trend, not wearing underwear when you do chores. I used to go to my grandma's friend's house, like, during the whole summer to use her pool, and she would always come in her nightgown, no underwear, and, like, pick weeds and just compulsively, like, tidy the backyard. I'm below you. I can see.
Oh my God!
I never got a full peek. But I knew there was nothing going on there.
Oh my God. That is literally the least unsettling thing about that entire story, and it is so unsettling. Throw some knickers on. What the fuck?
Yeah, that's weird. That, I can't believe they were like, I guess the attic's the way to go. I guess you have no other option.
Listen, when people have limited options and means, they involve themselves in some fucking crazy stories.
Also, the fact that she didn't know. Wow, thanks for that story. Whew.
And there's something really fun about that story, is that she sends a part two. So this writer had initially sent that in January, but because their name was something that didn't seem like a person's name, I just like missed it. Like it just like didn't look like a listener story in my inbox. But then I got a part two and able to find the part one and was like, what the fuck? And then now I have the part two.
Yes.
So this one is called The Past and the Present Converge, part two of I Secretly Lived in Someone's Attic.
I am so excited.
The writer's name is Katie Lee, and she says, this is part two of a story I submitted earlier entitled I Secretly Lived in Someone's Attic. While I was holed up and living in a deceased woman's room, getting rid of all her earthly belongings, with my fiancé, now husband, was having his own paranormal experiences in his college dorm miles away. And as competitive couples do, they won up. So when I wrote in and shared my story, my husband wanted to do so as well. And because I love him, I wrote it up, and now I give it to you. Enjoy. The past and the present converge. Hello, sexy weirdos. Love you, ladies. Seriously, we should hang out. This is a ghost story, but it is not my own. I hesitate sharing it because when it gets brought up in conversation, it always outshines my personal ghost story. So I'm a little bit spiteful and vindictive towards the person this happened to, my husband, Chris. But he gives me permission to share, so here we go. My husband went to the West Point Military Academy for college/military training. Me, Katie, my uncle Steve went to West Point.
Really?
So, and he's actually told, yeah, there's a lot of the military Italians. They're all there. Anyway, and he has told me ghost stories, and he is like the most buttoned up human man you can essentially imagine on Earth. He went to West Point Military Academy and was raised in Connecticut.
Tracks.
But he actually shared some like very faithfully rendered ghost stories from a very, very military man. So, pretty fucking funny. But yes, I have familial connection to West Point.
Ooh.
So she continues, history often dictates that old military camps or forts, if you will, often become permanent structures or settlements when they are no longer needed for military purpose. Such was West Point. Here's a brief history, Katie. This is for you. You're sweet. General George Washington considered West Point to be the most important strategic position in America during the American Revolution. Washington personally selected Thaddeus Kosciuszko, one of the heroes of Saratoga, to design the fortifications for West Point in 1778. There's a Kosciuszko, me Katie, there's a Kosciuszko stop on subway in New York. I can't remember which line now, but everyone pronounces it differently, which is really fun. And Washington transferred his headquarters to West Point in 1778. Continental soldiers built forts, batteries, and redoubts, I don't know what that is, and extended a 150-ton iron chain across the Hudson to control river traffic. Fortress West Point was never captured by the British, despite Benedict Arnold's treason. West Point is the oldest continually occupied military post in America. In 1802... And this place is also along the Hudson. Remember Hudson? Spooky vibes? Last episode? Am I the only one putting these things together? Okay. In 1802, the fort known as West Point became a military academy. The campus still has bits of long chain that were spread across the Hudson River to stop invading ships, lots of cannons, and thick stone walls and structures. With that all being said, the campus is beautiful. It's one of the closest things I've seen to an old-timey castle, in America at least. And what are castles but beautiful, beautiful war machines? She's right.
Good point.
Here's the thing about West Point. It is hard. And saying it is hard is an understatement. Saying West Point is hard is like saying shoving glass in my eye is uncomfortable. It's so much more than that. There is a very strict culture at West Point. Uniforms need to be perfect. Barracks need to be perfect. Grades need to be above par. Every aspect of the school is stressful. On top of that, you have to be physically the best. There's physical training every morning, drills and training throughout the day, into the night and on weekends, war games, etc. In addition to not only being academically and physically tough, there is also an exuberance of mental abuse and instability that comes along with it. Traditionally, upperclassmen pick on lowerclassmen, lovingly called plebes. Plebes is a shortening of the Latin word plebeian, which literally means underprivileged commoners. So there's that.
Oh.
I'll say this. I Googled West Point to find out exactly where it was. And the one of the questions asked about it was, is West Point a party school? And I was like, and then I read the answer and it said, based on the Princeton Review, West Point is a stone cold sober school. You do not, it is not a party school. Meanwhile, the college that I went to was in the news several times. Once because a girl who attended it had lost her license due to drunk driving and instead drove like an automated Barbie car around campus. And another time because a man got drunk in New Orleans and then accidentally told the taxi that he had caught in New Orleans his Texas State address. So the taxi drove him to Texas while he fell asleep in the back, woke up in Texas, and then paid the taxi driver to take him back to New Orleans. This is what my school is known for. And now, this is what West Point is known for. During the war, the current clock tower was actively used as gallows, and the parade field where cadets march today was called Execution Hollow. Long story short, through the years of being a military fortress and high-stress academia, there have been a lot of tragic deaths. Although, stone cold sober school. Although it is unfortunate, it's not uncommon for training accidents and suicides to occur on West Point grounds in addition to the already violent history. Here's where the story begins. West Point living quarters consisted of 3 to 4 cadets in a single room with bunks, about 60 rooms per floor. Shared closet space and storage trunks underneath the bottom beds. Each room had a small vanity with a sink, but was relatively sparse in all other furnishings. In quarters like these, it was common for there to be one large community restroom on each floor for all cadets to share. I think prison style. And I'm not wrong. One night, Chris, Wait, in prison, aren't the bathrooms in the stalls? Anyway. One night, Chris, or as I like to call him, Chrissy Poo, woke up around 2 a.m. to use the restroom. Asterisk. A really annoying thing you need to know about Chris is this. He goes from dead asleep to wide awake, like the flipping of a switch. There is no in between. So while I spend the first hour of the day like a cow coming out of anesthesia, Chris, oh girl, settle down. You'll feel right in a minute. Chris prances around like he's made of sunshine and happiness, and the rising of the dawn is a gift to him and him alone. This will be the reason I murder him. So, Chris wakes up, in parentheses and in all caps, wakes up around 2 a.m. His roommates were sound asleep, and when he exited his room, it appeared the rest of the cadets on his floor were fast asleep as well. One of the perks of military education is laundry service. Once a week, cadets would put their dirty laundry in bags and place them in the hall for laundry service to take the following day. On this particular night, it was laundry day, and all the cadets had their laundry bags staged outside of their doors. Although lights are out in the rooms, hall lights stayed on at all hours of the day. So it is as clear that, apart from laundry bags, there were no other cadets out of their rooms, and the corridors were completely devoid of activity. Chris begins walking down the long corridor to the restroom when he finally sees another cadet. He's sitting on the ground and leaning against the wall next to one of the laundry bags. He had one knee tucked into his chest with his arm around it, and the other leg sticking out into the hallway. His head was down, and he appeared to be crying. Chris noticed the weeping cadet just as he was about to walk into the restroom, and offhandedly noticed that even though it is late at night, the cadet was wearing a more formal uniform. West Point cadets have a million different uniforms for different occasions, and I couldn't even guess the name of this particular uniform, but it involved white gloves, which usually means more formal. She includes an infographic that has, like, at least 20 different uniform configurations.
Jesus.
They're all gray, white, and, like, different mixy matches of gray and white, and then white on top, white on bottom, gray on top, white on bottom, gray on top, gray on bottom. Just like they all kind of look, it looks a bit Russian, but that just must be, oh, you know what they look like? Nutcrackers. They look like a bunch of black, gray, white nutcrackers because they have little hats. Adorable.
Oh, huh.
I don't think I would be popular at West Point. I'll just say that right now. The curled up, I'm like, oh my god, you guys look like nutcrackers. Adorable. The curled up cadet was wearing one of the nicer, more formal uniforms, polished shoes, gray pants, gray buttoned coat, and white formal gloves, and gently weeping in the hallway at 2 a.m. I could shit my pants and stop here, but there's more. Chris took one step into the bathroom and froze mid-stride. He thought it was odd that someone would be up at this time in a uniform. Cadets had mental breakdowns all the time. And he thought he would check on the cadet to make sure everything was okay. Aww. He stepped back the way he came out of the restroom to check on the cadet, but he was gone. Only seconds had passed, and Chris hadn't heard anyone move or shut a door. The hall was still empty. He thought, that was odd, and continued to the bathroom to relieve himself. Afterwards, Chris was washing his hands, lathering with soap, when he noticed his reflection in the mirror above the sink, and a very bright, disembodied white glove hand reaching for him, as if to touch him on the shoulder. He abruptly turned around to address the person behind him, but there was no one there. He was dumbfounded by the experience, and when he turned back to face the mirror, he thought, the only thing that would make this any scarier would be if my nose started to bleed, like in the movies. And just as the thought escaped him, blood started to pour out of his nose.
What? Oh my
God. This is where his story ends. I'd like to think his butt cheeks clenched and he yoinked out of there at a brisk walk. Like when you shut the hallway light off and you're scared of the invisible demons behind you, but you're too proud to run. That kind of walking. That shall be known as yoinking from here forth. Surely his experience is tied to the tragic history of the school. There are many more stories out there similar to my husband's. I just get to hear this one over and over again. Thank you, ladies, for all the work you put into your podcast. Your quick wit and sense of humor keeps a smile on my face. Also, I've been meaning to thank you. As an Oregonian, I had an amazing stickening. Thanks for asking. Oh, my God.
How horrible.
So here's something kind of cool. It's come back to me what my Uncle Steve said about his time at West Point was that he and his friends had done a Ouija board. That's what it was.
Ugh.
Which is like a really cute image if you imagine a bunch of like the most rod up their ass, nutcracker ass teenagers like pulling out a Ouija board, like so funny.
Because
West Point is not only, you know, military school. It is capital M, the like military school. It is spooky and fucking old, and she's right, it does look like a castle. It's insanely hard to get into, and like she said, unbelievably difficult to endure. And imagining these guys with like tucking in their little white nighttime shirts into like their little sweatpants or whatever, like army grade boxers they're given. The sandpaper they're given to sleep in, and being like, I got a fucking Ouija board. And my Uncle Steve participating, which is basically unimaginable to me.
That's insane. He must have been peer pressured.
I think he just, like, does not believe in ghosts, so he did not think that it was a, spooky sense. Thing to do. So they used the Ouija board, and they were trying to connect with, I think, like, the drowned spirit of a girl who had drowned in the Hudson. However, given the history of West Point and the fact that there was literally, like, gallows and, like, lots of students have died and then gone on to wars and died, like, and it was, like, a literal military fort for a long time. Like, I feel like you, like, wouldn't have to throw a rock to hit, like, a spooky soldier story.
Oh, yeah. And suicides. Like,
yeah.
The possibilities are almost endless there. Did anything happen?
I think they like successfully connected with a spirit who said she was a girl and she had drowned in the Hudson or whatever. So I think that that's like what their experience was. But it just makes me happy to imagine all these like severely buttoned up like 20-year-old men doing that. But yeah, West Point's fucking crazy. And it has a lot of ghost stories associated with it. There may even be like a 90s documentary about haunted West Point. What do you think, Morgan? These are the stories I brought out for you.
I'm torn in half. It happened. Like a piece of paper hot dog style. I'm torn. It was so good. I can't.
Please, if anyone has any stories of being anything along the lines of eating the dirt that you put out for Bigfoot to walk through, please know that this is a safe place for you to send that.
Yes.
That is 100% what we are all about.
Yeah. Yeah. Please. And if you've just eaten dirt.
Yeah, I feel extremely privileged to have
I feel like these people are kindred spirits. Like,
100%.
I love them all. I can't believe she lived in an attic.
I can't believe she was like, the owner of the townhome or the home was like, you know what? I'll clear out the attic. What the heck? And then, like, you know, the move-in date kept approaching, and she's like, I haven't looked in there in years, but we'll just figure it out when she gets here. And then she's like, fine, I'll take that bed out of your room, and then does not provide her with another bed.
That's
and
insane.
And is like, enjoy this terrifying. Honestly, I'm really glad that there was Michael, Stinky Michael, and
thank God for Michael.
The two foreign students who didn't speak any English. Oh my God.
Why would you choose a hospital bed if you don't have the medical need? I just feel like it is a bad vibe.
Morgan, did you not listen? If you plug it in, it screams. Now it's time for our last Patreon story for now.
Ooh.
I may not continue doing Patreon story, or I may do them in smaller bursts because it is a lot of effort to write.
They're very good.
I really appreciate that. We got a patron, and their name was like just a username, and there was no indication of gender, and the image was not of a human being. And I was like, hey, do you have an address to send your pin to? or a name you want used? And they were like, I'm a traveler. I have no address now. As for my name, you can just use Camp. So I was like, okay, how mysterious. So this is Camp's story. Morgan and I, queasy but enthusiastic, met every depraved and dark-eyed member of the outcasts of Camp Rainier. We chatted, and they seemed uneasy about us. For evidence, we showed them our new camper log, with all the stories of all the creatures and spirits and all the in-between people we have come to call Camp, who have come to call Camp Roanoke home. Ruth, Maureen, Kathy, Carl Antoine, Finn, Brandon, Lindsay, Kellyanne, Salem, Chip, all the outcasts from our surrounding woods and so many more that have found kindred spirits in each other. Flipping through our camp log, they seemed to warm up to us. But then the question arose, if they agreed to leave, how would we get them to the East Coast? As we began discussing this, we heard a loud, goofy honk from within the woods. An old school bus, painted with flowers, rolled into the clearing. The door hissed open, and the driver called, "All aboard!" We all, creatures of the night and Morgan and I alike, stared gobsmacked at the vehicle. "What the fuck?" I said. The driver chuckled. They wore a bandana over their mouth and a cowboy hat, so we couldn't make out their face. They winked and said, "When travelers need a restful journey and night is falling like the rain, I provide this healing gurney to transport them with no pain. I specialize in lost, forgotten, I deal in crooked smiles. So if a weirdo's life is your lot, then ride with me for a dusty while. Camp is my name and your destination. I follow where there's fun. But camp is no Airbnb vacation spent hiding from the sun. I'll ferry you most gladly to a place where crickets reign, where all their hunger badly to get lost down Summer's Lane. So pick a seat and stretch out your legs. My road ends but one place, where fireflies dance and coffee dregs make the flowers worth a bee's chase." "That was beautiful," I said. "Are you God?" Morgan asked. Camp chuckled, and the bus hissed and lowered itself for us. One by one, we boarded the magical bus. That's such a fucking crazy line to say. One by one, we boarded the magical bus. And by the next morning, we saw the spire of the Camp Roanoke mess hall above the trees. All our campers came out to meet us in the clearing, and they curiously shook hands and talons and paws with our new additions. "How can we ever thank you?" I asked the driver. "Just tell a story about me around your campfire tonight." And with that, the door to the bus closed and it rolled away. "All right, campers," I said. "Let's get a mess of eggs and sausage going. We got a long day of activities ahead of us. Someone put sunblock on Morgan. Then summer session at camp officially begins." A cheer rose up as one of our alien campers tried to wrestle Morgan into a long-sleeved shirt.
That's funny because my mom recently was like, "You have a shirt to wear in the sun, right?"
"We know your needs at camp, Morgan, even if you won't oblige yourself." I'm so sad to be saying bye-bye for now.
Me too.
But we'll be back, and it'll be so much the better for it. We're going to brainstorm some really cool new things that we're going to do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be, like, totally invigorated and fun, and you're going to get even more of what you love times, like, 1,000.
Yeah.
As just, like, a mild estimate. Like, it's going to be, like, 1,000 times better.
Yeah, that's just a quote. And we might do a spooky gameplay at some point randomly.
Yeah, I would really love to do that. But that's on Morgan, so if it doesn't happen, hassle her.
Yes.
All right, guys. We love you so much. We will see you very soon. I think the summer's going to fly by.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we don't really have an estimate about when we're coming back. I'm thinking around late May. I mean, late July after, like, my birthday.
Yeah, late May. Very short break.
So we're going to be back in about 2 days. No, I'm thinking around after my birthday, July 21st. I feel like that feels like a, because Morgan's birthday just happened, and then I think we'll sort of bookend, and then mine, and then we'll be back. And then by that time, we'll be fully into the fall swing.
Oh, yeah, we will.
So if you would like to contact us, you can still do that via letterstocamp@gmail.com. You can still send your ghost stories, and you can post on the Camp Roanoke mess hall. That's not going anywhere. Yeah, so you can still participate and send recommendations or shows or documentaries or anything you would like us to talk about or topics.
Totally, yeah.
And we would love that. All right. Have a spooky summer
filled with restless dreams
of haunted things. We'll see y'all soon.
See y'all soon.
Bye.
Bye. Wear sunscreen.
Everywhere you look.
Dun, dun, dun. I'm so sorry you ate so much dirt.